The year before this year, he did nothing. So I think the split comes at a great time. He has no respect for the head coach. And as I just said, the organization, they're responsible, too, for the development as far as some of that has to do with the scouting. Vic Beasley was a one-trick pony in college.
That's Chuck Smith, who joined our Dukes and Bell earlier this week after the separation that we found out earlier this week. Basically, they came out with a statement on Monday, the Falcons did, by saying that they're not going to pursue a reunion with Vic Beasley after the expiration of his rookie deal. Welcome in on a Sunday, Willie P. Hugh Douglas here with you on Sports Radio 92.9 The Game. We've been talking a lot of different things. Hawks played tonight against the Knicks. Atlanta United winning yesterday in their preseason exhibition against the Birmingham Legion. And we'll talk some Falcons here. If you miss our chat with Clint Capella from the afternoon show, Dukes and Bell, you'll hear that a little bit later on this hour with a little radio replay. The Beasley thing, not surprising to me, Hugh. And I'm wondering why it got to this point with him. Like, that's my biggest question is why, how did it get to a point where you had a guy who had 15 and a half sacks in the Super Bowl year and his play just devolved into this specialty role, and not only a specialty role, but one that he wasn't too terribly good at?
Man, that's a good question. And that's one that I'm going to do my best to try to speculate on, because I wasn't a part of the regime. I don't know what was told to Vic Beasley that 15-sack year. He benefited greatly from the fact that offense was playing so well. I know that, and there were more opportunities to get sacks. I'll say that. But as far as why he regressed or he stayed the same, it all depends on how you want to look at it. That to me is coaching. Maybe it's the fact that you've had so many different defensive line coaches over the past few years. Not knowing how to motivate him—that's probably one of the biggest factors.
Well, the thing that I've just noticed, and again, you know more about this than I do because you did it in the league. You were a pass rusher. But the thing that it just stands out to me is that he would get caught upfield a lot, and he would not have the strength to be able to bull rush whenever he needed to. And that those would think. I mean, you have to be multiple as a lineman.
I'll say this: strength has something to do with it, but leverage plays a bigger part in that as well. And listen, coming into the league, I already had an ability to get to the quarterback. I had some type of ability, which he has. Coaches are there to enhance that and bring it out of you. Ray Hamilton, I'll never forget it, Sugar Bear, would sit there with me every week, and we would go through hand fighting, and we would be in practice, and he would show me how to use my hands and tell me, you know, Hugh, you're not the biggest guy out there. You know, you have to get their hands off you. That was every day. Every day we would sit back in the room, and we would drop, because for me, I was learning the defense as an individual, not as a whole scheme. Like that, like I was compartmentalizing, okay, this is what I'm supposed to do. Mm-hmm. No, that's not how you learn. You got to learn the whole defense. So that way you'll know how you fit in it and you have a better understanding of it. So me and Ray, he used to take that time. And he used to sit there with me after practice. And we used to draw up defenses, and I would go over them. And we would learn that way. And then we would go out on the field. I would go out a little bit earlier. And he would just come up to me and just start swatting and swimming, hand fighting. Mm-hmm. Just like, get your hand. Or what you got my hands on you for, you, Doug? Or he would grab me and I had to get my hands off of him. Mm-hmm. That's what he would do. Like, but you got to be able to have that in you. I think Vic has shown flashes of that. But you got to be able to get it out of him as well. Like, that's like, even if you're at the peak of your profession, at the upper echelon and playing in a professional football, coaches are there still for a reason. Mm-hmm. They're there for a reason, and they coach you up. Tommy Brazier, another coach that I had, John Turkovic, another coach, they still coach you up. You watch film and you look at what you did good and what you didn't do so good, and you learn from that, and you go out there every week with Tommy Brazier, my coach with the Philadelphia Eagles. Every Sunday going into the game, I had a strategy. on pass rush, what I was going to do. What's your first move you coming with? What you going to counter with? How are you going to play in the third quarter differently than you did in the first quarter? What did you set up in the first quarter? Like, things like that, man. It's like playing chess. I don't know if Vic was out there doing that. I think he was just out there rushing. Mm-hmm. He was just out there trying to get there.
Didn't seem like he had a plan.
Nah. And you have to go into it with a plan. You have to.
How easy is it? Because I know that for someone like you and in the era that you played, there probably was a lot more teaching being done at the NFL level than there probably is now.
Yeah, and you're right. And you know what? To be fair, the game has changed.
Right.
And the way that they practice has changed. And coaches don't have that kind of time that they used to have. That's why you have guys like Chuck Smith, Dr. Rush, who has his own pass rush academy that guys go to so that they can get that extra work. That's if you're serious about
it. To get the stuff you can't get.
Yeah, from your coach. Coach Quinn, extended an olive branch to Vic Beasley.
Yeah.
And asked him to come work out with him. He didn't do it. He had his own guy. That didn't work out.
You think there's an air of complacency about him? Maybe he got to a point where he felt like he knew what he was doing and he only knew what his best interest was.
If that's how you're putting it, if that's how you're going to present it, yes, then yes, that's what it is. Because I look at it like this. If my job is on the line and I need to do some things to let them know that I'm working on it, then I need to be there. And he wasn't.
You know, I talked to somebody before the year who said that the contract year is undefeated. Like he felt like that Vic would show up knowing that he had something to prove. I mean, this must tell me that he thinks that 15-sack season is going to stand on its own. I don't know if there's anybody in the league who looks at that and says, oh, my gosh, I'm totally impressed with what I'm seeing with the full package right now. Yeah, that was one good year.
Yeah. I see that's hard. I think that he's going to get an opportunity.
He is.
What kind of money?
Someone's going to be desperate enough to take him.
Yeah, what kind of money, don't know. But, man, this game has changed so much as far as guys that are able to rush the passer or perceived to be able to rush the passer. Well, there's a lot. Like,
Let me ask it to you this way. What were the guys on the 49ers doing? Like those guys, like those studs on that defensive line. What are they doing that he wasn't doing?
Dude, Joey Bosa just for him, he would go speed to power. He would go from power to speed, or he would go from power to slipping off the blocks. The one thing that he did when he engaged, he would always shock the tackle. You would always see that from his initial get off the ball. Like he would get off so fast, the tackle would jump, and then when he hit him, he was already shocking them, and that you would see their heads kind of like jolt back. And then he was able at that point to slide off the block and get to the quarterback. And he would do it in a way where you pull cloth with your left hand, you pull him across and with your right hand, you come underneath, and you get past him. Dude, it's not like it's not rocket science.
No.
It's not. But you can't be afraid to engage when you're going against a tackle. Because most times, say, for instance, Grady Jarrett, when Grady's out there playing, Grady gets initially hit probably in the face mask. A lot of times, probably went to the ref and told him a couple times.
That's hey, it. There's a lot of hands in the face.
Yeah, it's a lot of hands in the face.
That go uncalled on him.
Because he's not that tall.
Right.
So he's going to get those because they're trying to stop his initial charge because they're trying to get back. But what he does a great job of, he fights through that. He runs through that. And when he engages, they know he's so short and compact that he can push him back and slide off the block. That's the thing. You can't be afraid to engage. And most young pass rushers, they're afraid to engage. And when they do, you have to be able to get off the blocks. Now, Tack, he will engage, but he just can't get off the block.
Yeah, that's where the real conversation will turn now, because we could be having the same conversation about Tack McKinley.
And he can't stay healthy. Can't stay healthy. Like the shoulders, you need to probably be here, and you need to probably get your shoulder shrugs on and get your chest break. You need to do what you used to do back in the day. We used to call it a penitentiary workout, where you would get a deck of cards. And there's some young cats out there, well, old cats now, that know exactly what I'm talking about. You get a deck of cards, the kings are 10s, aces are 20.
Oof.
And you put that, you shuffle that deck, you throw it on the floor, and you try to go through as many of those cards as you can.
Oof.
Like, and every time you flip a card, that's how many push-ups you do. Do that. Do that for a couple weeks and see where you're at. Like, that'll help get your shoulders and your arms strong.
I hate the shoulder shrugs, man.
Yeah, all of that. You need to change your workout out, bro. You need to change your workout up, and you need to probably implement some squats. A lot of squats.
You're talking to Tack, not me.
Yeah. Hey, listen, Tack, if you're listening, I got a couple trainers in the city that'll get you right. I had a couple of them when I was here. They'll get you right. Get you ready to play this year. But you got to call me now, man. You got to call me while they still, rope man to get you right. Ty Felder up there off of Jimmy Carter, he get you right. And my man Rashid Shabazz.
You and I have one mind that pick number 16 has to be a D lineman.
Yeah, got to be. He got to be bona fide, too.
That's true. Here's the thing. I wouldn't be.
Hey, you got to be bona fide. You got to. Abe in my ear talking about he ain't nobody gonna be bona fide at 16. Well, you better move up.
Well, that's the thing. Right. That's my next question. Would you be willing to package all those picks, the three in the first two rounds, if you could get a deal at number two?
As long as he's bona fide, you talking about my man
Chase Young.
Bona fide.
That's bona fide. If you could package all three of those picks for the one guy, I'd take it. I'd take it in a heartbeat. Because that satisfies a need, does it not?
Yes, it does.
If you missed our chat with one of the newest Houston Rockets, Dukes and Bell had a chance to sit down with Clint Capella, talk about him joining the Rockets, the Hawks from the Rockets, I should say, what his addition to the team does for the overall makeup of the team. When we come back, Sports Radio 92.9 The Game.